And good morning on this very cold and brisk Wednesday, January 4th morning. It's 2017. It's our first morning show on a Wednesday in 2017. Wow. So here we are.
So it's like historic, right,
yep.
Susie?
And we want to invite, we appreciate our listeners tuning in on this cold morning for the morning show. And I'm Susie Prez, one of the co-hosts.
And I'm your second co-host here, Chris Bessler. Good morning, Susie. How's it going?
Good morning, Chris. I'm surprised I'm here. My car started. I was happy. So, yeah, I'm happy.
It's darn cold out there. But it was, as I was just walking over here like 6 minutes ago, it was really gorgeous. The sun was coming up. It's clear, crystal clear.
This is winter weather at its best in as far as clear, sunny skies.
Yeah, you bet. Yeah, we want to have a nice, healthy winter, and I think we're actually having a really fine winter.
Yep, I think so, too.
And so we have a lot to talk about today. We're going to be talking with a couple of folks from the Bonner General Health Community Hospice about what they do, as well as a special event they have coming up. But first,
The weather. Okay, the weather from the National Weather Service. You know, it was 9 degrees when I woke up, and now it's 5 degrees. I don't know what that means, how they decided to change that, but it's 5 degrees out from here in Sandpoint, Idaho, wind chill -5. So there's a little bit of a wind, but it's definitely less than it was the last 4 or 5 days.
You know, the temperature's varying quite a bit by locales.
Right.
At my house, it was 5 degrees this morning, and then one of the gals who lives up in Naples came in and said it was -14 at her house this morning.
Very well could be.
Yeah, so we're getting these little micro climate areas.
Right. And we can expect a high today of 15 and low tonight -1. I think that's the lowest we're going. High on Thursday, 16, and Thursday night, low 7. And it really actually warms up quite a bit. If all this is true and it stays as is, on Monday we could have a high near 33 and rain. So just so you know, that's a little different. But I thought it'd be fun to take a little tour across the top of the country, and starting in Missoula, Montana, let's hear what their weather is. They're a -8 and their wind chill, they have none. So it's calm finally over there. Havre, Montana, it's 0 with a -22 wind chill. Minot, North Dakota, it's -9, -25 wind chill. Fargo, North Dakota, -12, 28 minus wind chill. And International Falls, Minnesota, supposed to be the coldest place on the planet, or at least in the States, -12 and a -33 wind chill. But, however, in New York City, New York, it's 46 degrees today.
Comparatively balmy.
Yeah,
yes.
So we'll see what happens there. I think they'll get the cold weather in about a week.
Yeah, it's headed their direction for sure.
And that's that.
And other things going on outside. The sunrise this morning was at 7:37 a.m. Tonight it'll set at 4:04 p.m. And in the last week, we've gained 5 minutes of daylight per day as the days are getting longer now.
Clapping.
That's right. First quarter moon comes Thursday. And if you haven't been going outside at night to check out the sky when we have these clear skies, it's really quite a star show out there. But Schweitzer, they've had a lot of snow in the last, over the weekend, actually. They had 12 inches. They haven't had any new snow in the last day, but they now have 58 inches at the summit and 33 inches in the village. The snow's staying in really nice shape, actually, because the temperatures have been so cold.
So it keeps it kind of dry and fluffy.
Yeah, but they've had a ton of wind up high. And I can testify, because I was up there on Sunday and Monday, and the winds were just howling up at the top of the peaks.
How do you ski in weather like that?
Well, you get down below the top of the peak pretty fast.
Oh, okay. You just
and then you get further down the mountain, and actually the wind abated quite a bit, and there was big piles of fluffy snow.
Okay, so they keep really the nice lifts conditions open, unless it's blowing so hard it's dangerous on the lifts.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Yeah. Things going on around town.
Well, I wanted to say one thing.
Okay.
You know, we have this big event. KRFY and Team Autism 24/7 is having the Viggo Mortensen Captain Fantastic event at the Panada on the 13th and 14th of January. But I have to say, we're pretty much sold out. So, yay.
We're totally sold out?
Almost. I mean, I still have, I'm the only one here at the station. We have a few Friday night tickets left.
Okay. So the all the other locales where you can buy it are all sold out. If you want a ticket, you better give a call.
To? 265-2992.
And get a message in to reserve your ticket.
Yep,
and
that's
and
about
they only
it.
Have tickets now for the Friday show.
Friday show. That's
maybe
right.
A couple for Saturday?
Those are already spoken for.
They are. Yep. Okay. All right.
So
Friday's it to see Vigo here in Sandpoint.
And that's going to be a fun event. And we really have to thank all the organizers of that, Team Autism and KRFY. For putting it together, it's going to be a fun event, and the Panda's helping out a lot, too. So thank you yeah. to Mr. Viggo Mortensen for saying yes.
Yes. And a few other things going on around town. Winter Trails Day is Saturday. That's up at Schweitzer with the Sandpoint Nordic Club is teaming up. It's a kind of learn to ski, cross-country ski that day. It's a free event for everybody that's interested in cross-country skiing. And there's a bike movie on Thursday. There are fat bike demos also on Saturday. There's other things going on around town. We'll swing back later in the show and talk about the community calendar.
Sounds good. And so we could get to our guests.
Yes. And today we're talking with two folks that are volunteers at the Bonner General Health Community Hospice. We have Alyssa DeFriedis. She's the volunteer and bereavement coordinator. Hi, Alyssa.
Hi, good morning, Chris.
Thanks.
Good morning,
thanks for
Susie.
Making it.
Good morning.
And we also have Paul Graves. He's the volunteer chaplain.
Good morning.
Thank you both very much for coming in. So let's start at the top. You know, and I know you've been on before and we've talked about what hospice does, but for folks that haven't heard the story, tell us what Bonner General Health Community Hospice does.
Well, thank you, Chris. First, I want to say, it's a beautiful opportunity to be here to share about our hospice. And I will tell you, Bonner Community Health, Bonner Community Hospice is a philosophy of care where we have the opportunity of honoring the reverence and uniqueness of life. And I want to say that top on my list because a lot of times we have the thought that with hospice that we are helping people die. But what I want to say is that hospice is about helping people live fully to the very end of their life. So with our Bonner Community Hospice, we offer a quality of care that is multidimensional, where we have our nursing team that provides pain management and comfort care. We have our chaplaincy, we have our social workers, and our CNAs that provide personal care, as well as our volunteers that are companioning at bedside, which I feel is the most profound experience. We have over 70 that are part of both our Bonner and Boundary County that provide respite at bedside, personal care, and companioning. We also have a bedside vigil team that is amazing, that is there in the threshold time of life, along with our bereavement team that offers amazing services to all of our community. It's a very rich, indeed, program.
It seems like, you know, because this end of life, as we call it, is so vital to the whole experience of being alive, that having all of these different support teams, so to speak, together and really helping the families too. And that's probably where the social worker and the volunteers come in. I have heard that the program we have in our community is outstanding.
It is. Thank you, Susie. Yeah. We feel that it is. And one of the things that makes us so unique is that we meet people where they are, and we are able to provide not only education to the patient and the families, and be able to walk with them and really assess what is the things that are needed to really enhance the quality of your life, to support you in this time, and to help prepare you for the end of life. And it's an amazing gift to be able to have that conversation. So many times, people come on board hospice with perhaps only weeks till the end of their life. And that makes our job a little bit bigger in terms of helping those families really prepare and provide everything they need.
Kind of being vitally aware and involved very quickly.
Right.
And help with that transition period.
Absolutely. And past the transition, because we offer bereavement to our families as well as our community.
Mm-hmm. And we have had this program here for how long?
Well, I will say that our grassroots beginning was in 1986, and this was way before we became Medicare certified. So the thing that, again, makes our hospice unique here is that this was birthed from our community hearts. People knew that there was a mission here. There was gaps here where people needed that support at the end of life. And so that grew both here in Bonner and Boundary County. And then in 1991, we merged with our Bonner Community Health, and we became a Medicare-certified hospice, which was amazing because not only could we could experience and support with practical care and respite care, but we could also add that additional medical and social work support.
Who were some of the folks that really spearheaded this in 1986?
I would say Dr. Puffer and Janet Sturdivant were one of the leading people. I have to say that they are both my heroes because I was a hospice volunteer way back in those times. And they really carried the heart of hospice to where it is today. In fact, I'll just quote Dr. Puffer in what he shared about our volunteers. He said, "Hospice volunteers are the heart and soul of hospice." And it just gets me emotional just thinking about it because truly it's the heart that allows us to do what we do in this community.
And mm-hmm. vital work that is
It is
done.
Vital work. Mm-hmm. And it is big work. I often refer to it as big work because as Paul and I will have the conversation about talking about end of life or even embracing the possibility of death is not an easy conversation to have. And it can be very difficult for those that are not prepared. And we want to be there to partner with our community members to create a transition that is gentle and on purpose.
So hospice comes into play when somebody has been diagnosed as terminally ill?
Right. Usually it takes a recommendation from two physicians, one from the primary physician estimating that that person might have 6 months or less in terms of their life-limiting illness. And then that is supported by our medical director, Dr. Bonine, who is, by the way, a volunteer medical director. So I want to really acknowledge the gift of his work on board our hospice because without him, we couldn't do what we do.
Mm-hmm. And you talked a little bit about people facing their end of life. Mm-hmm. And I'd probably direct this question to Paul. How do you counsel somebody that's now basically facing a very concrete idea that they're going to die soon?
I think that there are a couple things that we need to approach, not just what we do, but how we do it. I think how we do it is every bit as important. And I think one of the ways that we need to approach people is with compassion, but also with a gentle honesty. And if people know that they're safe, they can begin to relax. They can begin to be honest not only with themselves but with family members. So many times we've run into family dynamics where mom dying is a secret to everybody except mom and everybody else, but they aren't talking with each other. And I can only speak for myself, but I'm fairly confident in, because of my conversations with staff members and other volunteers, that they've had similar experiences in so much as they've been able, in some instances anyhow, to say to mom, you know, your kids need you to be strong, but part of that strength is being honest with them. And sometimes adult children don't want to hear that mom knows she's dying. But that's, you know, it's important.
So how does that conversation begin prior to even coming into hospice. This hospice is, as you said, 6 months or less and two doctors. But really, the conversation can happen way before that because this is being human.
Absolutely.
Part of our journey here on this earth.
Oh, Susie, that just opens up a wealth of something because truly, if we really are honest with ourselves, death is a part of life. But often it's not something we really plan for. It's not like a planned birth. It's not like we plan our birthdays. It's not something we push it to the side. And sometimes we might visit it if we have some sort of illness or something that's, you know, activating the thought of, well, maybe, gosh, I might not be here for as long as I think. I might want to have that conversation. But a lot of times we don't have the conversation. And so when we end up in a crisis, a medical crisis, where all of a sudden family members are having to make decisions about what do we do for mom, what do we do for our sister, what do we do for our brother, all of a sudden stress happens because no one has had the conversation. So it's helpful to have that way before a medical crisis, just in general to talk about how do I want to live? What matters to me is really the question. What matters to me in my life and what matters to me in the care towards the end of my life?
And you have found that having this conversation ahead of time and really understanding certain aspects of that end can make a difference in the experience.
It makes a difference. And we even have studies that will show that those that have advanced directives, when they have that crisis, their anxiety is lowered, fear is lowered, you know, stress is lowered because the plan is there. The plan is there and the family members can be there or whoever they decided to be a proxy for them. They are there to support them and walk with them as they want to be cared for. They know what the plan is and then they have their teammates there to make sure that happens for them. And there's got to be a great comfort in knowing how I'm going to respond in a medical crisis.
Hmm. So what is our name for this type of planning? I mean, in my head, I'm saying your exit plan.
Advanced care planning.
Advanced care planning, okay.
I guess is what we call it.
Well, we can call it a lot of different things, yeah. I suppose. I tend to prefer end-of-life planning, mm-hmm. but In recent times, I've been thinking that a healthy mantra would be, end of life goes so much better if you plan ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I love that, Paul, because that's true.
It is true.
Yeah.
It is true. And that's when, you know, that's what most of my ministry has been about, whether I was in the parish or later when I was in geriatric social work, working predominantly with older people and their adult children. Then when I started Elder Advocates 11 years ago, I started in part because of the panic that I was seeing in the lives, more so in adult children than in the older adult, in the parent. And I think to some degree we've been successful in helping people come to grips with the reality in healthy ways. Back in 2012, we had, it's a long story, but the short version of it is that in September, a group of us had planned a Saturday morning event down at the what was then Panhandle State Bank Community Room. And we had no idea how many people would show up, but we wanted to offer the opportunity to talk about end of life. So on a Saturday morning, 60 people showed up. That told us something very quickly. We had another similar event, kind of a follow-up on it, in January of 2013. And we had another 60-plus people. So we knew that there were a number of people who wanted to talk about end of life in safe ways. And prior to that September event, I had started the Geezer Forum in January of 2012, and we kept circling back to end-of-life discussions in one way or another, and we're still doing that. I can remember clearly the very first session that we had, a group of us gathered around, there were about 20 of us, we gathered around a couple of tables, and before we got started, this one lady said, "Well, Paul, what are we going to talk about?" And I said, "What do you want to talk about? Whatever you want to talk about is what we're going to talk about." That was when it was far less structured than it is now. And she said, "Well, I need to talk about the fact that my son has terminal cancer." Well, that kind of set the tone. And I was so glad that it did. Another lady, we went around, and she and her husband were there. They were in their 80s, and she said, I want to find out what I'm going to do when Joe dies. Oh. So.
Very different situations, right, aren't they? Right.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And, but all the, you know, so the whole 4 years that we've been doing Geezer Forum, we've had opportunities to come back to the topics that deal with end of life. My guess is that people who have been attending the forums on a fairly regular basis feel stronger about who they are and maybe are doing better, not always good, but better at talking with family about an illness or about the time when they get ill and what's going to happen.
I think people, human beings, love information and need information and need to know. Right. And if it's this unknown thing that's in front of you, be it your family member or even thinking about it for yourself, it's a lot better to have kind of prepare. We like to be prepared. That's what the scouts tell us.
Yes.
Be prepared.
Yes.
And so these kind of avenues and experiences help with that. And it sounds like hospice has a lot of pre-hospice care support, too.
Absolutely, Susie. And to add to what you were saying, Paul, is that based on those experiences, it just reminds me of what the depth of peace that must be to be able to be in an environment, a safe environment, in which I can talk about, golly, what am I going to do? My son was diagnosed with a life-limiting illness, or how do I plan? Or I can talk about this here. We find that so often when we support our community with bereavement, is that they realize that people in their lives, after a certain point, they don't quite know what to say. They don't have the words to express how do I support my friend, my family member. And all of a sudden, we realize when we come together and we're able to acknowledge that loss, that people feel a sense of calm just in knowing there's a safe place to talk about this pain in my heart, this huge gap that's missing since my loved one died. And I think it's essential to be able to have those open-hearted places for people to have these conversations and to be able to share and acknowledge what's so important to them, what matters to them.
To tell their story.
And to tell their story.
If you're just tuning in, this is the 88.5 KRFY Morning Show with hosts Chris and Susie. And we're speaking today about Bonner General Health Community Hospice with Lisa DeFreitas.
DeFreitas.
I tried.
You had it great the first time.
The volunteer coordinator, and Paul Graves, the volunteer chaplain. Thank you both for being here again. So you talked about two cases that I think Paul did just a moment ago, about two cases, one with a child that was dying of cancer and one with an older lady that was considering her mortality. And it occurred to me that those are such different situations. You expect the older folks to go eventually, and the older folks know they're going to go eventually. But how does hospice work with people that are going before their time? Is that a different sort of conversation that happens?
It's truly not a different sort of conversation, because we meet people where they are. There are some people, and I want to just roll back to what you just said about people that might feel because they're older, this is their time. I haven't found this to be necessarily 100% because we often have people that come on board hospice at 99.5 years old, and they're not quite ready to leave this world. And it really depends on the person and how they have come to embrace their life and also looking at death as a part of life. And there are some people that come and all of a sudden are diagnosed and they did not see this coming and they might not have felt they've lived their life. And now all of a sudden there are, you've got hospice on board, they have their quality of life is diminishing, they realize they're getting closer to the end of their lives and they might have or decide that there's some work for them to do. Or they might go and not acknowledge anything. And sometimes people can be in great spiritual pain because they're just not prepared to really walk that journey in a full, open-hearted way. And so everyone is so unique and different, and that's what we find. No matter what the age, it's the person that really, where we meet them, and whatever the... wherever they are, we assist them in that journey. Mm-hmm.
So the tools that you bring to that individual case are very different.
Absolutely.
Be it a child and helping them if they lost a parent with kids camp in the summer to all kinds of a parent losing a child or suddenly or long term.
Right.
So every situation is different.
Every situation is unique, even though we have very specific programs, like you mentioned, with our kids grief camp, and that's for children ages 8 to 17. But even though we have that specifically for children, we do have a grief group that meets for adults every month, twice a month, and people from all facets of life, whether it's a loss of a child or whether it's a loss of a parent or of a partner, all of those people are welcome. And it is a unique journey for each and every one. But what they have in common is their experience.
I was just looking at my co-host, Chris, trying to get his attention to see if we should maybe take a musical break because we want to get to what's coming up. You have a very special program coming up on the subject of that we're talking about from a book that was written called Being Mortal.
Yes.
I would imagine every hospice worker reads that book. I have. And we want to talk about that and see, make sure everyone understands it. But taking a little musical break right now might be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is Bruno Mars, Count on Me. And we'll be right back with Lisa DeFreitas.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say that right?
Lissa.
Oh, I said the second one right.
I know.
Lissa
DeFreitas
and Paul Graves. And we're talking about hospice and Bonner General Health Hospice Program. We'll be right back. Bruno Mars, Count on Me.
If you ever find yourself stuck in the middle of the sea, I'll sail the world to find you.
And that was Bruno Mars, Count on Me. And this is 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. And this is The Morning Show with Chris and Susie.
And Susie, I must declare, I believe that's one of your favorite songs.
It is. I play it like way too much, but that's okay.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
You like it. We are speaking today with two folks from the Bonner General Health Community Hospice, Lissa DeFreitas and Paul Graves. Thanks again for being in, both of you. You have an event coming up.
Absolutely.
That'll be of interest to people, whether they have this question right in front of them right now or down the road.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we're so grateful at our Bonner Community Hospice to be able to offer Being Mortal as a screening for our community. And I want to tell a little bit about Being Mortal because Dr. Gawande wrote this book called Being Mortal, and an amazing, transformative book because he talks about his personal experience, not just as a physician, but as a son, helping to look at those questions and make those decisions at the end of life for his dad. And so PBS, Frontline, developed a movie about his experience and his book. PBS showed it. And then our Hospice Foundation of America provided a grant for all of our nation to be able, hospices across the nation, to be able to share this with our community members. And it is about an hour long. It is amazing. Bring the Kleenex box with you, because I have to say that it is a very beautifully done movie that really highlights those kinds of situations that come up in the life of all of us in which we're facing a life-limiting illness. And he talks about his experience and how he works with his patients and how he worked in his family. And so I will say that our Bonner Community Hospice is offering it twice, because we have very limited seating, and the gift is that our Life Care Center of Sandpoint is offering a complimentary lunch, which is such an amazing gift that they're teaming with us. So during this event, we'll get to see the screening, but we'll also be able to have an opportunity to really have a conversation. And Paul Graves will be one of the ones, along with another volunteer chaplain, Deborah Gift, who will be helping to facilitate the conversations that we have after we've had this experience of watching the movie and really talking about these end-of-life matters. So I think it's an amazing event.
Dates?
Oh, the dates? That would be a good thing to know, Chris. Our very first date. Oh, in the place.
Time and place, yeah.
February 11th from 10. I mean, I'm sorry, January 11th. Susie's keeping me in check here. And then February 15th from 10 to 1:30 in our health services building. The Monarch Room, come on and be with us. I will ask the community to call an RSVP just because we have limited seating. But we're very grateful to be able to offer this to our community members. And
this again is at the Life Care Center.
Center of Sandpoint is providing our meal.
Providing the meal. Okay.
Yes, they're providing our meal.
But the location is at the new Modern General Health Services building on the first floor. Okay.
In the Monarch Room.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And those are both Wednesdays. Right. And you ask that people call to RSVP, and that phone number is
265-1185. And we'll make sure that we have your name on our list. And we'll be so grateful to have you join with us.
Mm-hmm. And this is good for anybody to attend, right?
Anyone.
It's not like an age thing.
There's no age.
Necessarily somebody that has an illness that they're facing right now, or this is for people that just want to begin contemplating being mortal.
I think mortality is the key word. And Paul, I know we've had a lot of conversations about mortality. And I think this is one of the things that I love about this book and, again, the screening, is that mortality is a word that really evokes some real truth about life, because we are mortal. And I think in our culture, somehow we've missed that reality. Sometimes we act as if mortality is not really a part of life. And so I think by highlighting it, by acknowledging that we are mortal, that as mortal beings, when we know that there is an end to our life and we can embrace that, then we have an opportunity to also have the conversation and talk about how we want to live our life, but also what matters as we approach the end of our life.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if when a child is born, if they just really held that child and said, welcome, you are mortal.
Yeah.
Just a reminder, by the way.
Welcome to this world.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, all those aspects. I want to say that this movie, Being Mortal, put out by PBS Frontline, they do such an excellent job on all of their productions and offerings as far as videos go. In films. And Dr. Gawande, this book, if you haven't read it, I highly suggest it. Mm-hmm. It's life-changing.
It
really changes your paradigm a little bit, mm-hmm. enough to say yes to something like this. And not only will people be able to see the film, but be in a group of people that are there intentionally and have the conversation afterwards, it sounds like there'll be a period of time to discuss.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, after the film, we will have a time for discussion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm taken by what you just said, that reading the book is life-changing. Right. And I'm wondering if part of that life change that happens is because you're able to look at death in a different way.
Mm-hmm. It could be. You know, I think probably everyone has a different feeling for it, but even the people that I've heard that have read it still just say that, what a great book. And anyone working in hospice, but, you know, we're all working in hospice. Mm-hmm. We all are going to be there standing by the bedside of a loved one, maybe, right. If we're fortunate enough to be there with them
fortunate.
And hold their hand and walk, you know, walk with them to that threshold.
Right.
And a book like this just gives you a little bit more stability in that process.
You know, too, I want to also acknowledge that he's a physician
mm-hmm.
writing this book.
Gawande is.
Dr. Gawande.
He's a surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
And he has just left a ripple in our whole medical community, because a lot of times people look to doctors for that guidance and they look to them for the conversations. But in real life, it doesn't always happen that way. So many families come to our hospice without really having the full understanding, without really having the opportunity to have the full conversation with someone to really know what's going on. It might not be until they get on board hospice that now we start filling in the gaps. This is what's happening for you. This is what's happening with your illness. We're walking with you in that way. And so he's really setting a precedent, I feel, for...
I think he is. And it's important to acknowledge the courage that Dr. Gawande experienced
right.
or expresses through the writing of the book and doing all of the talking and lecturing and whatever that he's doing in regards to dying, because not that many doctors are that courageous.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the ways that shows up, and this is a pet peeve of a lot of us who work in hospice, is that doctors, for some reason, have been very reluctant to encourage certain patients to get involved with hospice. They still think that going to hospice is fatal. What's the word I'm looking for?
Something to avoid.
Right. Well. They're
it's
admitting
a failure?
It's admitting defeat. And a lot of doctors just are not ready to do that. But there are, I think there are a lot of people, their wounds could be healed more quickly if they had a safe place like hospice to talk about the fears, to talk about the, and also to get physical pain under control.
Right, right.
That's such an important part of the hospice protocol. The nurses are real experts in pain control.
Absolutely.
And I just wish that more and more doctors, and this has been a constant as long as I've been involved with hospice, clear back into the early 80s down in Lewiston. I helped get a hospice started down there. Doctors just don't get people to hospice fast enough, and so these folks don't have the opportunity to have a fuller life in the face of death.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with what Paul is saying, and there's also another element that I see. And that is that we're in a medical system right now that is very fractured in that we have a lot of specializations. So often someone comes on board, and it's not like back in the day where you had one primary physician. This is your family doc, and he's kind of walking with you, and he's even coming to your home, and he's letting you know and the whole family what's happening. But right now in this world, we have oncologists and other specialty people, and sometimes it's just when there's so many people involved, who knows who's really having that conversation, that palliative care conversation. This is something that Dr. Gawande does, and there is a movement now that there is encouragement through some new legislation for physicians to have these end-of-life conversations. And I think that's a beautiful step in to be able to say, we're going to support you in terms of giving you some repentance for being able to take the time to have these conversations. I think that's one step. But there's also what you were talking about. Sometimes for doctors, and this is what I noticed with Dr. Gawande, it's not so easy to have these conversations, to say, well, there's really not a whole lot I can do for you medically, but there's things that I can do for you or recommend for you for the quality of your life.
One of the things that we have found in experience of visiting with people who are anticipating death or who just either imminent or, well, I'm 75, I better start thinking about this kind of thing. One of the resources that has been available to people for the last 4 years is called the Conversation Project. Mm-hmm. It's easy to get onto. It's theconversationproject.org.
Yeah.
And they have a conversation starter kit. It's down. You know, you can download it for free. And it's a series of questions and some statements about the importance of these questions that families can use as primers for their own conversation. My guess is that individual people or a family needs to take the initiative and say to a doctor, we need to talk about something.
Right.
I think, in fact, my guess is that there are some doctors who would welcome that because it kind of takes the onus of them being, of them having to pretend to be God away from them. That must be a big burden to carry.
Mm-hmm.
And if they know that a family is ready to talk about mortality, they can relax and start talking about it with them.
Mm-hmm. And it's like the elephant in the living room.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
And be effective in their service to their patient, too.
Right, right.
Much more so.
It's probably healthy for families and people to be talking about this subject of death far in advance of ever even getting sick or facing it directly.
Way before an illness happens, way before a crisis happens. You know, I love that you're mentioning the Conversation Project. They have a special pamphlet for those that are affected by dementia and Alzheimer's. And so their questions are a little bit different. So that's also on the website. And something I just want to share, this is something that the Conversation Project blew my mind. And this is what's saying in their statistics, that 90% of the people say that talking with their loved ones about their end-of-life care is important, but only 27% have actually done so. Mm-hmm. So we know that people, like Paul was saying, really feel that the conversation is important, but often people don't know how to have that conversation, first with their family and with their physician. And so part of what we'll be doing together at Being Mortal is assisting people in these are maybe some potential steps in which you can do that.
Mm-hmm. Kind of breaks the ice a little bit mm-hmm. and opens up the conversation to whoever gets to attend this very important opportunity.
Yeah, thank you.
And again, we'll just mention, Lisa, do you want to just mention again what this is coming up?
Sure,
with Bonner General Community Hospice.
Being Mortal, come join with us. Dr. Gawande's based on his best-selling book, Being Mortal. It's a 60-minute screening that was developed by Frontline, and PBS showed it, and our Hospice Foundation of America has provided a grant for us to share it with all our communities across America, and we're going to be sharing it at our health services building right here in Sandpoint on the first floor in the Monarch Room on January 11th and February 15th. That is a Wednesday from 10 to 1:30. So we hope that you would join with us. Life Care Center of America is offering a complimentary lunch, and we want to thank them with all of our hearts because they bring us delicious, delicious lunches. And RSVP is important. So please call me at 265-1185.
And I'll mention that we do have that included in the community calendar on KRFY.org, as well as sandpointonline.com. Go to the community calendar and click to the civic calendar, and you'll see some more information on the film Being Mortal, and have your phone number there too.
What an amazing opportunity, and really thanking Bonner General Community Hospice for providing this opportunity for our citizens here in our community. I think these are the kind of things that make a difference.
Oh, thank you, Susie. And we're grateful to be able to team and companion with our community.
Mm-hmm. And thanks to Paul for just always being there with these kind of conversations, be it the Geezer Forum or the thing you mentioned before that you've been involved in for quite a while.
Since 2012, you said, Paul?
Hospice chaplain.
Oh, the
For the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been doing that intentionally since 2012.
Yeah, all very good work. I know people that have benefited greatly from those kind of things and from hospice for sure.
Mm-hmm. We're about out of time, but does hospice also work with people on just the practical matters of dying and taking care of your estate and deciding who's going to get what? And
hospice doesn't directly, is not directly involved with the advanced care planning in that way. Mm-hmm. But the ways that our hospice will team with our community, I want to share with you, we have an amazing community bereavement support. So not only do we walk with our families that have been on board with us after the loss of their loved one, but we also work with all of our community members that have experienced a loss, whether it be an illness or sudden loss. No matter who you are, we have our ongoing groups available and one-on-one that we can offer. We have amazing bereavement volunteer team of therapists and volunteers that can help walk with you and companion with you in such a loss. And we're grateful to have this opportunity to do it.
Mm-hmm. So if somebody has experienced a sudden death in the family, mm-hmm. an unexpected death, which just can be very difficult to deal with as well, the bereavement services are available.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Chris.
All right. Well, we're very fortunate. And thank you so much, Lyssa De Freitas.
Thank you, Susan.
Did I say it right?
You did.
Wow. That's beautiful. And volunteer coordinator at Bonner General Health Community Hospice and Paul Graves. Thank you very much for joining us today. And we just want to remind our listeners that this conversation that we had today on the morning show will be available as a podcast later on at krfy.org. And we're going to take a little musical break right now. This is Ben E. King. Do you know what song it is, Chris?
I'm sorry.
Okay. Really? You don't know? Okay. Stand By Me.
Stand By Me. Oh, there we go.
We'll be right back with a little bit of community.
Perfection.
Perfection. We'll be back with more of the community calendar right after this song by Ben E. King, Stand By Me. And that was Ben E. King, Stand By Me. And this is 88.5 KRFY. This is the morning show, and it's Wednesday, January 4th. So what do you got going over there, Chris, on the community calendar?
Well, there's a ton going on in our town as usual, although actually it's a comparatively quiet week compared to some of the weeks we have. We do have tonight the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness is having a Ecliptic Brewing Tap Takeover, and that is at 5 p.m. at Idaho Poor Authority, and this is a event that features seven different ecliptic brews, fun giveaways, and some live music. And it's a kickoff to support the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness Winter Tracks program. That's tonight at 5 p.m.
And I hear that the Brewery Boys with Sandy Compton are performing. And Ecliptic.
Ecliptic.
That is a brewing company.
Yes.
Okay. Wasn't sure exactly what that was, but that makes sense.
It sounds kind of scientific or something, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah, could be. There's also a bike movie night happening again. Greasy Fingers Bike and Repair is at 3rd. That's 108 North 3rd Avenue is hosting this bike movie night. The several bike-related films. That's at 6 p.m. And it's free, so just come on by the Greasy Fingers Bikes.
All right. If you want more information, you can call 255-4496.
And then tomorrow, it's Beer Hall Thursday Night Solo Series at McDuff's, and it's featuring Benny Baker playing from 7 p.m. until 9 p.m. He's a guitarist, and he'll be rocking out like you've ever wanted.
Ever wanted him to.
Yeah, since you heard the first electric guitar. So that sounds kind of interesting, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah. And again, that's tomorrow from 7 to 9 p.m. at McDuff's Beer Hall.
Another thing that's happening tomorrow, January 5th, is Ice Age Mega Floods, a phenomenon of the Pacific Northwest. This is a presentation by Tony Lewis from the Ice Age Floods Institute, and it's starting at noon at the Sandpoint Library at Cedar Street. The focus will be on the physical processes and results of landscapes of the Ice Age flood features in eastern Washington and northern Idaho. And it's free and open to the public.
And, you know, that's quite a story, these huge mega floods that happened during the ice ages. And that we were at the very heart of it because this big ice dam came down from up north and created a huge dam across Lake, where Lake Pend'Oreille currently is, and backed up what is now the Clark Fork River into glacial Lake Missoula. That dam would break out every few hundred years, they believe. And these huge floods would roar down the mid-Columbia Basin and scoured out the channeled scablands, and the floods would go all the way out to the Pacific Ocean. It's really quite a story.
It sounds like something you're interested in, and you could go listen to tomorrow at noon at the public library.
Yes, indeed.
We're pretty much out of time. I have one song queued up, but I want to say that next week on tomorrow, actually, on the KFY Morning Show, Jack Peterson will be here with a musical retrospective of 2016. And next Tuesday, the Morning Show with Phil and Julie will feature Rich Del Carlo, who will talk about birds and wildlife of winter. And I was just wondering, what are the birds doing in this cold weather? So maybe he can tell us that. And next Wednesday, our guest will be Shannon Williamson from Lake Pend'Oreille Waterkeepers, who will talk about the importance and details of their storm water monitoring program.
All interesting stuff.
All very interesting
and
stuff.
And one more shout out for the movie An Evening with Viggo Mortensen. That's coming up on the 13th and the 14th. I believe the 14th is sold out. If you want a ticket to that for the 13th, that's next Friday, then you better give a call. And the number to call is
265-2992. We hope you have a beautiful day. We're over and out. This song is The Monkees, I'm a Believer. And it was the number one song in 1967. That was 50 years ago today. And we hope you have a beautiful day.
Bye now.
Bye.